This too shall pass. Like I said, I champion adversity, right? We know what to do when things go right. But the next time it gets tough, the next time you question your purpose, the next time you question your existence, your mission, if you're supposed to be doing what you're doing, and it gets tough and challenging, just whisper to yourself, this too shall pass. This too shall pass.
Carney being blitzed, but he gets up, fires the ball down.
Never allowing a situation or circumstance to define your life, and understanding that you got something inside of you that's greater than that situation or that circumstance, but you have to constantly believe it, and not only believe it, you have to make decisions and choices every single day to put you a step forward toward what you believe your destiny is. A cop asked me once, he said, man, what's your dream? I said, I'm gonna go Division I, I'm gonna go to college, and I'm gonna go to the league. And he's like, you'll probably go to cell block D. And I was like, man, you're making a mistake. Like, I've never met you a day in my life. I'm gonna help as much as I can. I'm gonna serve as much as I can. I came from a place to where I watched my mother scrape up change. This one moment just changed my life. When we go through something, what's the perspective that we have of? I love the game, right? It hurt that my career ended. Right, it hurt. And if you're from London, Atlanta, Florida, California, New York.
Johnson being carted off the field and pumped his right fist.
And I'm going to use my situation and my circumstances, my driving force, and my like, I took a loss, right? People never look at it and say, okay, man, tell me, what did you gain? All you got to do is do what you've been doing, and you'll get a shot. You'll be an automatic multimillionaire. You could take care of your family. And I was like, awesome, man. And so coming into my junior year, I'm thinking, all I have to do is do what I've been doing. I just got to play football. That's easy, right? And I come out the first game we play against California Bears. I execute. I have a great game. We get the victory. And we're going into the second game against Air Force. Tough group, disciplined group. Fourth quarter rolls around. 2 minutes left. And so usually in 2 minutes, the game is basically about to be over. And so we're thinking, we make a couple of more stops. I'm thinking, if I get the opportunity to hit a guy in the game, make him fumble, get ready for Florida the next week. And so the quarterback drops back, throws it to a guy, he catches it, and I go to make the tackle. That's supposed to end the game. And as soon as I hit him, right, something different happened that never happened to me before in my life. Right, and my body goes completely limp. I fall to the ground, I black out. So I attended Alonzo A. Krim High School. And so it's an Atlanta public school. It's over on the east side of town. It was in my neighborhood. And the name of the school was Krim High School. People in Atlanta knew it as Crime High. Right, because of the crime, violence. It was the same rep as the neighborhood, pretty much. People don't go to college out of there, right? That was the rep. And so when I got there, people would say to me, hey, Ink, do you want to go to college? I say, yeah, I'm going to college. They'd say, what school are you going to? I say, I'm going to Krim. I say, people don't go to college really from Krim. Like, you got to transfer. People came to talk to my mother, right? Coaches across town at great schools told my mother, hey, we can guarantee you we'll get him a scholarship to play football. Just bring him to our school. My mother said to me, hey, Inky, you want to go to college? Yes, ma'am. Well, you got to go to this school in order to make it happen. People don't really go to college from Krim. I said, yeah, but I think I can do it from Krim. And they transferred me my sophomore year to this school, Tucker High School. Great school. Sports off the charts. Kids going to college left and right. And I got there and I was so upset. Why aren't you going to class? And I would say, I want to go to college from Krim. They're like, man, you're out of your mind. Like, you're at the cream of the crop. Like, you want to go back across town? You want to take the harder route and you probably won't even make it from there? And I was like, yeah, because I believe if I make it from there, not only will I make it, I'll open up the door for my family, my friends, and I'll show the people in my community that you can make it from this high school. I was on a mission. Right? Not only just to go to college, I wanted to change the perception of the school. I wanted, when people spoke about it, they spoke about it a certain way. My cousins went to college, right? couple of my friends ended up going to college. My wife went to college from that same school, right? And so it was a mission that I was on. I just don't think at that time football was the most important. So it was real life issues. When we would come to the lunch table, whereas as most high schools, kids would come to the lunch table, they're talking about goals, dreams, you know, aspirations. When we would come to the lunch table, we're talking about real life problems, right? We were talking about how such and such is gonna eat, right? We were talking about how can he get some clothes on his back, right? What can we do for such and such? We was talking about our situation. And we were in high school, we were teenagers, right? Dealing with real life problems. And so football wasn't the most important thing, even though we played it. But to me, it was the most important thing because I felt like this could be the vehicle that I could help my family through. So I was playing football from the time I was 7 years old, right? Because I'm coming from this household to where I sleep on the floor, right? With roaches, with rats, I'm not ashamed to admit it, right? And I would go to school and I would compete, I would work. And so when I met a kid that I was competing against, the only thing I felt I had the advantage in my whole life was my work ethic. And I took pride in that, right? I was never the biggest, the fastest, the strongest, never had the most resources, but I had a work ethic. And so for me, when I got on the field, it was like I was free, right? I was free from my household, that two-bedroom home with all the people. I was free from sleeping on the floor. Like, this was the thing that my identity, and I could just be me. But also, I could hit people, right? I could tackle people. I can inflict violence, not get in trouble for it. So it was a vehicle of expression that I felt as if I do this well, I can get my family in a better situation. If I do this well, I can get my mother off the double shift at Wendy's. If I do this well, I can get my own bed. If I do this well, I can get my grandmother a better living condition. If I do this well, maybe I can stop my uncles from selling drugs, right? And so for me, I viewed it that way, right? And I firmly believe perspective drives performance. And so my perspective about the game is different. And so therefore it drove my performance to be different. It's a lot of moments and it's a lot of people that change and impact your life, right? Like, I don't believe it's just one moment and you say, this one moment just changed my life. Even though that moment may have, but it's going to be another moment that's going to shape and change your life as well. Like, my arm changed my life. I did everything the way I always did it, right? I prepared for the game the same way. I listened to the same music. My pregame routine and ritual was the same. And in that game, when I went to make that tackle, I went at it the way that I always went at a tackle. But for some strange reason, when I hit him, every breath in my body left, right? My body went completely limp, fell to the ground, blacked out, right? When I came to, my teammates were standing over me like, Ink, get up, let's rock. I was like, I can't, right? I can't move. There was a shock going through my body. I couldn't feel anything. When they get me over to the hospital and they run their test and then they bring me back into a room and my mother had just left the room kissing, praying, you know, kissed me on my head, praying and saying, Ink, you'll be fine, right? And when she walks out, the doctor runs in and says, guys, we got to rush this kid back to emergency surgery. He's about to die. Like, I'm thinking he's joking, right? And he's like, no, man, you ruptured your subclavian artery in your chest. You're bleeding internally. I've got to rush you back, take the main vein out of your left leg, plug it into your chest in order to save your life. He said, oh, I guarantee you, you won't be here in the morning. He said, you're bleeding internally. And so the next morning I woke up, I was grateful that I was still alive. Hurt that my career ended, right? It hurt it, right? But I was there. My life was spared. Like, if they didn't catch that my artery had busted and I was bleeding internally, I could have went to sleep that night, and the next morning the title on the paper, the newspaper, would have been different. It wouldn't have been Inky Johnson suffered possibly career-ending injury. It'd have been Inky Johnson lost his life last night from a tackle made in the game. And so it made me view it differently. Even though I had a long road of rehabilitation for my arm ahead of me. Never let a situation or circumstance define your life, no matter what it may be. My grandmother used to say something to me all the time, and I think it's so true. And she would say to me, Inky, either somebody is in the midst of adversity, or just came out of adversity, or it won't be long before they head into adversity. So you need to be prepared either way. When we go through something, what's the perspective that we have of it, right? Because for most people, when you go through something, the person's natural perspective is, okay, what did I lose, right? What happened to me? Like, I took a loss, right? People never look at it and say, okay, man, tell me, what did you gain, right? Even though I know it hurt, you didn't want to go through it, but look at it in a way to where you can say, what's the lesson in this, right? What would you say life is trying to teach you from dealing with this? Okay, what can I extract from it to apply to other areas and aspects of my life that I feel can help other people? And I firmly believe the quicker you can shift your perspective from yourself to others when you're in the midst of adversity, the quicker you'll get through it. Martin Luther King has a quote that says, life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing to help other people? And so we all go through adversity, opposition. I think that's the thing that makes us all in common as people, right? No matter if you're from London, Atlanta, Florida, California, New York, like, we're all going to go through something at some point or phase in our life. It's never about what happens to you. It's about how you respond to it, right? But in the same sense, I think what's most important is, when we go through something, what's the perspective that we have of it? Now, I'm not telling you to not acknowledge your pain. I'm not saying that. I'm not telling you not to say, man, I'm going through this and it's hard. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when you go through it, look at it, step back from the picture and say, okay, I'm dealing with this. 9 out of 10 times, there's somebody else that's either dealt with it or they're going to deal with something similar to this. And if I deal with it in the right way, I can use it to add value to lives of other people. The funny thing was, I had never heard of the injury that I suffered. Never heard of it. I met probably 10 guys years after that have been going through it, that I could talk to at different stages and phases in the process and say, hey man, Ink, how did you deal with this? How did you deal with this? When they told you this, how did you accept that, right? How did you process that? And I was like, bingo, this how I got through it. This how I dealt with it, right? But I had to shift my perspective from why me to why not me. What you went through just wasn't for you, right? Basically, like, I was being selfish about my situation and my experience. Like, when we go through a situation and circumstance, it's easy to step back and think, man, I just went through this and it's just my experience. I firmly believe when we go through things, it's for us to deal with it, get over it, and reach back over the hill to help another person. And a lot of times, like you said, when you're trying to work through it, you think, man, how can I help somebody? And I'm trying to get through it myself, right? And that's a great perspective, right? But when you get through it, right? Maybe you can't help them when you're in the midst of it because you're processing it. But when you get over the hill, I think it's important and I think it's vital that you reach back over the hill and help somebody that may be going through a similar situation, and you can share your values and principles with them, because that experience that we go through and we deal with is not just for us. My teacher changed my life. When he met me in the 8th grade, the first day he told me, my wife at the time, he said that she's gonna be your wife one day. Scared the mess out of me. Like, man, this guy's lost his mind, right? But I'll never forget, he drove up in my neighborhood and I was on the corner with one of my uncles. And my uncles at the time, they were drug dealers, right? And I wasn't selling drugs, I was just hanging out. You hung out in the neighborhood on the street. It was like, get in the truck. And I got in his truck, he said, point me to your house. I pointed him to my grandmother's house. We pulled up, I get out, and he says to me, Ink, you're better than that. And I was like, I hear you. I was like, but the same corner you just picked me up from, my uncle wear a 2X t-shirt. I said, morning when I come to your class, I'm gonna be wearing a 2X t-shirt that he stood on the corner in and probably sold drugs in or did whatever all night, and I'm 135 pounds. I'm coming from a real situation. Right? So I hear you talking, but I'm coming from a real situation. And he was like, you think I'm playing? I'll be here in the morning to pick you up. And the next morning he picked me up and he said, here's the deal, man. He said, I'm gonna pick you up. I'm gonna play you in a game of one-on-one basketball every morning. And I'm gonna make you recite a proverb until you graduate high school. And I was like, he's just talking. And every single morning he did it. He'd pick me up, take me to school. He would play me in a game of one-on-one basketball, make me recite a proverb. And this is the moment I knew it was for real. The principal came into the gymnasium and said to him, I heard you've been given inky proverbs. And he said, yes, sir, I have. He said, stop it or I have to fire you. And at the time, my teacher was 23 years old, right? We were his first class of students, fresh out of college. And he looked at the principal and he said, well, you're just gonna have to fire me because his life is worth it, right? And I'll never forget in that moment saying, if he's willing to put the way that he provides for his family on the line for me, I gotta give him everything I got, right? And I never wanted to let him down. I think the greatest gifts in life, man, is belief and exposure. There was a lot of moments in my life to where it was people that saw things in me that I couldn't see in myself. And they believed in me in a way that I couldn't believe in myself yet. And I rented their level of belief until I got strong enough to possess my own. Right? It's like when you're young and they see you, and it's like even when you start out doing what you're doing, you could be talented, right? And somebody older than you or more experienced than you can see you and know like, oh man, if he did this or if he does this, man, he could be great, right? And they can come to you and say, hey kid, man, you got something. Like, you could be great, right? Like my teachers and my coaches, when they came to me and they was like, son, I'm telling you, like you can go to college, man. Like you really, I know you're talking about it, but your circumstances are saying different. I think you can do it, right? And when they said it, I'm like, oh, I can do it. Like I can make it happen because they're believing in me making it happen. I think I can do it. So I think belief. And the reason I say exposure is because, like, I think when you show people things, that's powerful. I think exposure sparks inspiration, right? Exposure sparks motivation. Like, when I was coming up in that two-bedroom house with all those people, and I went to the other side of town with my coach, and he was like, no, people don't, you don't have to live like that, Ink. You can live a normal life, right? It changed my whole mindset. And my mindset can never go back to the way that it once was because I have been exposed to something different, to something new. And so I think belief and exposure are two of the most powerful things that can happen to a person. I was born to a mother at 16 years old, a single mother, and she was working a double shift at Wendy's. And at the time, she took me back to 125 Warren. So 125 Warren was a two-bedroom home. You know, it's 14 of us living there in that house. And I slept on the floor, you know, with my cousins, with aunts, you know, there's a lot of us. And when I was in that household, you know, my uncles were going in and out of jail, prison, from doing different crimes. And so being there, it kind of affected me in a couple of different ways. You know, I got to see both sides of the spectrum. I got to see my mother get up and go to work. You know, even though she was a single mother, had a hard time raising a son, then she later had my little sister, but she still got up and she went to work and she did it the honest way. And I got to watch my uncles, you know, that I felt were good people at heart, but because of the situation and the circumstances, they felt as if they needed fast money. And so they went out and did certain crimes, from drug selling to drug dealing, all type of things, and it landed them in prison, in jail. Uncle's still in prison until this day. And so I got to see both sides of it and the collateral damage and what it did to family and what it did to children. And so I got to make a choice at an early age because I got to see the dual mentality of both decisions and choices. But at the time when I was coming up, it was violence, you know, even in my household, you know, it was drugs, you know, all these things that were transpiring and happening. And that kind of shaped my mindset and the angle and the way that I live my life even until this day. You know, you come up in a two-bedroom home with that many people, it was a lot of love, but at the same time, you feel as if that's life, right? Because my friends up the street, they were struggling the same way. They lived the same way. They slept on the floor the same way. They didn't have beds, right? And so when I started playing sports, the thing that sports did for me, it wasn't just opportunity, it gave me exposure. And so I remember the first time I went to my coach's house, and I was like, man, like his kids got their own room. Like they got their own beds, right? Like they're living. They don't have to rush to the dinner table to try to make sure they rush to get the food because they don't have as many people in the house. Whereas with us, you got 14, 15 people at one time in the house, you got to rush to try to eat sometimes, right? And so when I got to experience a different side of life, I remember coming back and talking to my cousins, and I was like, it's a different life out there. And they were like, what do you mean? I was like, it's a different life. Like, it's people that don't live like this, right? Like, this is not normal. And they couldn't fathom it, right? Until we were with my coach one day, and I remember he bought me my first steak, right? And I came back home, and I was like, man, coach bought me a steak. Man, I got a steak, right? And I was so hyped. But what it did for me was it made me realize that people didn't have to live like that if they didn't want to. It impacted me and it affected me. I was the first one in my family to go to college. My grandparents had 16 children, right? Three of them graduated high school. Three. So the value of education was extremely low. And when I came along and I had this dream of going to the NFL, going to college, I could have looked at my situation and said, well, man, more than half of my family didn't even graduate high school. So it's far-fetched. It's not going to happen, right? People even told me when I got to high school. And a cop asked me once, he said, man, what's your dream? I said, I'm going to go Division I, I'm going to go to college, then I'm going to go to the league. And he's like, you'll probably go to cell block D1. And I was like, man, you're making a mistake. Like, I've never met you a day in my life. And he's like, your family went to this school. Your uncles went to this school. They got an uncle in jail, right? Got an uncle in prison, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, apple don't fall too far from the tree, right? And what he was saying to me was, you'll probably repeat the same pattern that they repeated. You come from the same household, right? And I could have looked at it and made an excuse and said, I'm going to lower my standards to meet and accommodate my household, my experience, my situation, my circumstance. Or I can take my situation and my circumstance and raise my standard and say, I'm going to be an example and I'm going to triumph and I'm going to use my situation and my circumstance as my driving force and my fuel, right? And so never allowing a situation or a circumstance to define your life and understanding that you got something inside of you that's greater than a situation or a circumstance, but you have to constantly believe it, and not only believe it, you have to make decisions and choices every single day to put you a step forward toward what you believe your destiny is. I would be in the park late when I was a kid and after football practice because my mother worked a double shift, and so I would stay there and I loved the game. And when she would pull up in the park, you know, most of the kids would be going home and I would be sitting there on the bench. And she drove at the time. It was an old Buick Regal. And hubcaps off the car, you know, seats torn up, car was all beat up. But we loved it, you know, it was my mother's car. And she would pull up and get out and I would hug her, kiss her. And I would say, Mom, if you don't mind, can you sit in the car and turn on your car lights? I got to do some extra drills. Got to go to the NFL so you'll never have to work another day in your life. And I knew my mother was tired, right? And my mother never said to me, nah, boy, let's go. Get in the car. Let's go home, right? Like, bump that. Not doing that. She would always go sit in that car, and she would turn on those car lights, and I'd be out on the field. I'd be running laps. I'd be doing agility drills. I'd be running sprints, chasing this dream to go to the NFL. And for me, that level of sacrifice was the thing that drove me and still drives me until this day. Right, that's why when I competed, it wasn't just about a sport for me, right? Like I looked at competition, I looked at work ethic, I looked at dedication, I looked at commitment, I looked at sacrifice as this is life for me. This isn't about a sport. This is about things that I can extract from this sport and apply it to everyday life to make me somewhat of a decent human being, right? And so when my mother did that for me, that made an impact and an imprint on my soul, right, that I take with me even until this day. When you're young or when you do something and you're a novice, right, and you start out doing it and you might think you can do something with it or you might not. You might do it and it's being driven by your passion. And then somebody comes along that's a little bit older or even more experienced, and they can see it in a way that you can't see it, right? And so I think it's important with belief, because if a person believes in you in a way that you don't believe in yourself, you can rent that person's belief until you get strong enough to possess your own, right? And you use that person's belief to fuel you every single day, right? Because you can have a level of belief with what you're doing, but you can go back to a certain set of circumstances that tell you, nah, it's not gonna happen. And so you rent that person's belief until you get strong enough to possess your own. I think having a purpose is that thing that makes us tick, that gets us up every day and gets us over the hump of opposition and adversity. And the reason that I champion adversity and opposition is because I think for the most part in life, people pretty much know what to do when things go right. Right? Like when things go right, they know how to feel, they know how to act, how to react. But it's when that opposition and that adversity comes and it creates a level of misunderstanding, right? Now the vision is blurred. Now you don't have clarity about what you're supposed to do. Now you question if your existence matters. And I think when you have a purpose, it's powerful because in the midst of the opposition, it makes you realize that you've been put here for a certain reason. And so me, once I tapped into my purpose of once, I thought it was football, right? But when I started speaking, I'll never forget the day I got the exact same feeling backstage that I used to get before I ran out on the field to play football. And that's when I knew, like, this is my purpose. This is what I've been put here to do. And so the opposition, adversity, the challenges, it's just a part of the process. It's gonna make me a better person. But my purpose, I can't let anything stop or detour me from tapping into that every single day. Because the key with purpose is, I firmly believe every person's purpose is tied to somebody else's purpose and destiny. And so your purpose, my purpose, is tied to somebody else. Like when I speak, when I do what I do, like people say, "Oh man, I really needed to hear that, right? That helped me do this, that helped get me through this, that helped me with this." That's my purpose being tied to other people's purpose, destiny, beliefs, and dreams. That's the power and magic of purpose, right? I don't think it can be a purpose without being tied to other people's purpose, destiny, dreams, and aspirations, right? I think that's the power in it, but realizing it is another thing. I think the true measure of wealth is happiness, right? Like I really do. And that's not saying that I'm against money. I'm not against that at all. Because you gotta work hard, make your money to take care of your family and be able to bless people. But I think it's a lot of people with so-called wealth and they don't have joy and they don't have happiness. And for most people, their material possessions, they feel are the most important. For me, when you got joy, when you got peace, when you got happiness, I think that's true wealth, because you can't put a price on that. A guy asked me just yesterday, "What do you think about stem cell? Why don't you go over to London or one of these places somewhere and try to get stem cell for your arm?" And I was like, "I got peace." And he's like, "What does that mean?" I was like, "I'm good with my situation, right? Like I'm wealthy because of that. I got something that you can't put a price on, right? You can't price out my joy. You can't price out my happiness. You can't price out my peace." Now, if I measure wealth by money, money is a number. Numbers never end, right? So you never catch it. Numbers never stop. If your happiness is predicated upon a number, if you're being wealthy, it's predicated upon a number, the number will never end. And so therefore, you'll never be wealthy. I wouldn't change a thing, right? And the reason that I wouldn't change it, you know, a lot of times I think people think that the reason I say I wouldn't change it, it has just something to do with me, right? And it does to a certain extent, because my perspective changed, right? The man that I now am, I think as a result of my injury and the things that I've been through, right? The whole process of it, right? From rehabilitation to accepting the injury to learning how to do things with my left hand, the whole process of it. But the reason I wouldn't change it is the impact that I saw it have in the lives of people that I love, that I respect, and people all over the world, right? Like, that lets me know that this was a part of my destiny. This was divine appointment, right? Because I saw people around me visibly change, right? Because I was able to remove myself from the situation and not just sit there and be like, why did this have to happen to me? Why me? Not that anything is wrong with that, right? If a person has to question it, do what you got to do, man, to get you through your process. But in terms of me dealing with it, right, when I was able to remove myself from the situation, step back and started to view how what I was going through affected other people for the better, right? Their lives improved as a result of it. And so if I go back and say, I'll change it, I would have to be thinking only about me and my selfish ambition of making it to the NFL. And the reason that I wouldn't change it is because of not only the impact that this had on my life, the reason I wouldn't change it is because of the impact that it had on people's lives that were interconnected to me, both directly and indirectly. If I get to the end of my life, and you know, I'm an old guy at the time, and I'm sitting back in a rocking chair on my porch with my wife, and got a head full of gray hair, and our kids come up, and we're just chilling out, and I've accomplished a lot, and my wife is sitting there, and my son and my daughter comes up, and they say to me, like, Dad, man, you accomplished a lot. Like, you're a great player, you've done well speaking, but we feel like you're a terrible father. What would it be worth for me to accomplish, gain, give them certain things, and suck as a father, right? My wife got me aside and said, hey man, you've done really well speaking and like your athletic ability, but you're a terrible husband. What would it be worth, right? And so for me, I feel like the greatest gift I could ever give to my children is showing them that I honor, love, respect, and admire their mother, right? The greatest thing that I could ever give to my children also is not something that I can give to them. It's the things that I will leave in them, the principles, the values, the guide, how you treat people, how you live your life, how you make decisions and choices. And so family is something that's very important to me. For me, the true measure of greatness is if you can reproduce it in your family, like with your children, right? If one day your children come up and they're great, not great in athletic ability, no, great people. I just want to be a great person, man. Like, I want to, when the clock stops on my life, when it's all said and done, like I was telling my kids, like the best thing that I could ever give to them, right, just as a father, as the leader of my household, the best thing that I could ever give to them is a good name, right? That's the most valuable thing that I could give to my family, right, is a good name, right, that people know we do things the right way, we treat people the right way, and situations and circumstances and people don't affect or don't alter that, right? When it's all said and done, when people speak about me, they don't have to lie on my behalf, right? They don't have to say, oh, he's a good person, but in their heart, they don't believe that to be true, right? Not saying that everybody is gonna like me. Everybody doesn't like everybody. Like, it just doesn't happen that way. But for those that know me and my character, right, when it's all said and done, will I have said more than I've done? Because for most people, it's a lot of talk, right? But I want to do more, right? I want to be a great person. I want to make my impact on the world, right? I want to go down in the Character Hall of Fame, right? The character, like that was a man of supreme character. You judge the character of a person not by where they stand in times of comfort and convenience. You judge the character of a person by where they stand in times of challenge and controversy. Hey, how you doing, guys? Inky Johnson here. Just got done, man, doing an interview with my guys, the Mulligan Brothers. We had a great time. I appreciate their platform and what they do. Most importantly, I respect and I admire it. Take care. Peace.